Hey, how's it going? This is Dune. This is Dune Reads Goosebumps, recorded on February 23rd, 2010. Just as a preface, I don't know, I'm a little later than normal. I don't feel very good. I ate a bell pepper, you know? My body's normally used to, like, California burritos and that sort of thing, and I think the bell pepper, my body's rejecting it. It doesn't like it, but, you know, I gotta give you goosebumps. Gotta give you goosebumps. You know, you actually can't contract goosebumps if you pull out. I gotta give it to you. Just kidding. Just a tip in. All right. Anyway, we're on a Stay Out of the Basement by R.L. Stine. Chapter 10, we're starting off. There's some kids, and their mom's out of town because her sister's sick, and her dad's in the basement all the time. He's got some weird plants, and the plants attack the brother. And now it turns out the dad was eating some plant food, and then he's got leaves growing out of his head. It's fucking it. All right, anyway, I'm drinking a Longhammer IPA. It's a bit too classy. You might want to check out if I'm turning into a plant. Am I right? All right, chapter 10. Margaret pulled the covers up to her chin. She realized she was trembling, her whole body shaking and chilled. She held her breath and listened. She could still hear water splashing into the bathroom sink, but no footsteps. "He isn't coming after me," she told herself, letting out a long, silent sigh. How could I have thought that? How could I have been so terrified of my father? Terrified. It was the first time the word had crossed her mind, but sitting there in bed, trembling so violently, holding on the cover so hard, listening for the approaching footsteps, Margaret realized that she was terrified of her own father. If only Mom were home, she thought. Without thinking, she reached for the phone. She had the idea in her head to call her mother, wake her up, tell her to come home as fast as she could, tell her something terrible had happened to Dad, that he was changing, that he was acting so weird. She glanced at the clock. 2:43. No, she couldn't do that. Her poor mother was having such a terrible time in Tucson trying to care for her sister. Margaret couldn't frighten her like that. Besides, what could she say? How could she explain to her mother that she'd become terrified of her own father? Miss Brewer would just tell her to calm down, that her father still loved her, that he would never harm her, that he was just caught up in his work. Caught up. He had leaves growing out of his head, he was eating dirt, and his blood was green. Caught up. She heard the water in the sink shut off. She heard the bathroom light being clicked off. Then she heard her father pad slowly to his room at the end of the hall. Margaret relaxed a little, slid down the bed, loosened her grip on the blankets. She closed her eyes and tried to clear her mind. She tried counting sheep. That never worked. She tried counting to 1,000. At 375, she sat up. Her head throbbed. Her mouth was dry as cotton. 420. She decided to go downstairs and get a drink of cold water from the refrigerator. I'm going to be a wreck tomorrow, she thought, making her way silently through the hall and down the stairs. It is tomorrow. What am I going to do? I've got to get to sleep. The kitchen floor creaked beneath her bare feet. The refrigerator motor clicked on noisily, startling her. Be cool, she told herself. You've got to be cool. She had opened the refrigerator and was reaching for the water bottle when a hand grabbed her shoulder. Aye! She cried and dropped the open bottle on the floor. Ice-cold water puddled around her feet. She leapt back, but her feet were soaked. Casey, you scared me! She exclaimed. What are you doing up? What are you doing up? He replied, half asleep, his blonde hair matted against his forehead. I couldn't sleep. Help me mop up this water. I didn't spill it, he said, backing away. You mop it up, woman. You made me spill it, Margaret declared shrilly. She grabbed a roll of paper towels off the counter and handed him a wad of them. Come on, hurry. They both got down to their knees and, by the light of the refrigerator, began mopping up the cold water. I just keep thinking about things, Casey said, tossing a soaked wad of paper towel onto the counter. That's why I can't sleep. Me too, Margaret said, frowning. She started to say something else, but a sound from the hallway stopped her. It was a plaintive cry, a moan filled with sadness. Margaret gasped and stopped dabbing at the water. What was that? Casey's eyes filled with fear. They heard it again, such a sad sound, like a plea, a mournful plea. It's coming from the basement, Margaret said. Do you think it's a plan? Casey asked very quietly. Do you think it's one of Dad's plans? Margaret didn't answer. She crouched on her knees, not moving, just listening. Another moan, softer this time, but just as mournful. I don't think Dad told us the truth, she told Casey, staring into his eyes. He looked pale and frightened in the dim refrigerator light. I don't think a tomato plant would make a sound like that. Yeah, I don't think so either. Margaret climbed to her feet, collecting the wet clumps of paper towel and depositing them in the trash can under the sink. Then she closed the refrigerator door, covering the room in darkness. Her hand on Casey's shoulder, she guided him out of the kitchen and through the hall. They stopped at the basement door and listened. Silence now. Casey tried the door. It was locked. Another moan, sounding very nearby now. It's so human, Casey whispered. Margaret shuddered. What was going down in the basement? Or what was going on? Whatever. What was really going on? She led the way up the stairs and waited at the doorway until Casey was safely in his room. He gave her a wave, yawning silently, and closed the door behind him. A few seconds later, Margaret was back in her bed, the covers pulled up to her chin despite the warmth of the night. Her mouth was still achingly dry, she realized. She had never managed to get a drink. Somehow, she drifted into a restless sleep. Her alarm went off at 7:30. She sat up and thought about school. Then she remembered there was no school for the next 2 days because of some kind of teacher's conference. She turned the clock radio off, slumped back into her pillow, and tried to go back to sleep. But she was awake now, the thoughts of the night before pouring into her mind, flooding her with fear she had just felt hours earlier. She stood up and stretched and decided to go talk to her father, to confront him first thing. To ask him all the questions she wanted to ask. If I don't, he'll disappear down in the basement. I'll sit around thinking these frightening thoughts all day, she told herself. I don't want to be terrified of my own father. I don't. She pulled a light cotton robe over her pajamas, found her slippers in the cluttered closet, and stepped out into the hallway. It was hot and stuffy in the hall, almost suffocating. Pale morning light filtered down from the skylight overhead. She stopped in front of Casey's room, wondering if she should wake him up so that he could ask their father questions too. No, she decided. The poor guy was up half the night. I'll let him sleep. Taking a deep breath, she walked the rest of the hall and stopped at her parents' room. The door was open. Dad? No reply. Dad, are you up? She stepped in the room. Dad! He didn't seem to be there. The air in here was heavy and smelled strangely sour. The curtains were drawn. The bedclothes were rumpled and tossed at the foot of the bed. Margaret took a few steps towards the bed. Dad? No. She had missed him. He's probably already locked in his basement workroom. She realized, unhappily. He must have gotten up very early and... What was that in the bed? Margaret clicked on a dresser lamp and stepped up beside the bed. Oh no, she cried, raising her hands to her face in horror. The bedsheet was covered with a thick layer of dirt, clumps of dirt. Margaret stared down at it, not breathing, not moving. The dirt was black and appeared to be moist, and the dirt was moving. Moving? It can't be, Margaret thought. That's impossible. She leaned down to take a closer look at the layer of dirt. No? The dirt wasn't moving. The dirt was filled with dozens of moving insects and long brown earthworms, all crawling through the wet black clumps that lined her father's bed.
Chapter 11.
Casey didn't come downstairs until 10:30. Before his arrival, Margaret had made herself breakfast, managed to pull jeans on and a t-shirt. Had talked to Diane on the phone for half an hour and had spent the rest of the time pacing back and forth in the living room, trying to decide what to do. Desperate to talk to her dad, she had banged a few times on the basement door, timidly at first and loudly, but he either couldn't hear her or chose not to. He didn't respond. When Casey finally emerged, She poured him a tall glass of orange juice and led him out to the backyard to talk. It was a hazy day, the sky as yellow as a Chinaman, the air already stifling hot, even though the sun was still hovering low over the hills. Walking towards the block of green shade cast by the hedges, she told her brother about her dad's green blood and about the insect-filled dirt on his bed. Casey stood, open-mouthed, holding a glass of orange juice in front of him. Untouched, he stared at Margaret and didn't say anything for a very long time. Finally, he set the orange juice down on the lawn and said, "What should we do?" In a voice just above a whisper, Margaret shrugged. "I wish Mom would call." "Would you tell her everything?" Casey asked, shoving his hands deep into his pockets of his baggy shorts. "I guess," Margaret said. "I don't know if she'd believe it, but it's so scary," Casey said. "I mean, he's our dad. We've known him our whole lives. I mean..." "I know," Margaret said, "but he's not the same. He's..." "Maybe he can explain it all," Casey said thoughtfully. "Maybe there's a good reason for everything, you know, like the leaves on his head." "We asked him about that," Margaret reminded her brother. "He just said it was a side effect, not much of an explanation." Casey nodded, but didn't reply. "I told some of it to that idiot Diane," Margaret admitted. Casey looked up at her in surprise. "Well, I had to tell somebody," she snapped edgingly. "Edgily? Straight edge? "Diane thought I should call the police." "Huh?" Casey shook his head. "Dad hasn't done anything wrong, has he? What would the police do?" "I know," Margaret replied. "That's what I told Diane. But she said there's got to be some kind of law against being a mad scientist." "Dad isn't a mad scientist," Casey said angrily. "That's stupid. He's just... "Just what?" Margaret thought. "What is he?" A few hours later, they were still in the backyard, trying to figure out what to do, when the kitchen door opened and their father called to them. Margaret looked at Casey in surprise. "I don't believe it. He came upstairs." "Maybe we can talk to him," Casey said. They both raced into the kitchen. Dr. Brewer, his Dodgers cap in place, flashed them a smile as he set two soup bowls down on the table. "Hi," he said brightly. "Lunchtime." "Huh? You made lunch?" Casey exclaimed, unable to conceal his astonishment. "Dad, we've got to talk," Margaret said seriously. "Afraid I don't have much time," he said, avoiding her stare. "Sit down. Try this new dish. I want to see if you like it." Margaret and Casey obediently took their places at the table. "What is this stuff?" Casey cried. The two bowls were filled with a green, pulpy substance. "It looks like green mashed potatoes," Casey said, making a face. "It's something different," Dr. Brewer said mysteriously, standing over them at the head of the table. "Go ahead, taste it. I'll bet you'll be surprised." "Dad, you've never made lunch for us before," Margaret said, trying to keep the suspicion out of her voice. "I just wanted you to try this," he said, his smile fading. "You're my guinea pigs." "We have some things we want to ask you," Margaret said, lifting her spoon but not eating the green mess. "Your mother called this morning," their father said. "When?" Margaret asked eagerly. "Just a short while ago. I guess you were outside and didn't hear the phone ring." "What did she say?" Casey asked, staring down at the bowl in front of him. "Oh, Aunt Eleanor's doing better. She's been moved out of the intensive care. Your mom may be coming home soon." "Great!" Margaret and Casey cried in unison. "Eat," Dr. Brewer instructed, pointing to the bowls. Aren't you gonna have some?" Casey asked, rolling his spoon around in his fingers. "No," their father replied quickly. "I already ate." He leaned with both hands against the tabletop. Margaret saw that his cut hand was freshly bandaged. "Dad, last night," she started. He cut her off. "Eat, will you? Try it." "But what is it?" Casey demanded, whining. "It doesn't smell too good." "I think you'll like the taste," Dr. Brewer insisted impatiently. "It should taste very sweet." He stared at them, urging them to eat the green stuff. Staring into the bowl at the mysterious substance, Margaret was suddenly frozen with fear. "He's too eager for us to eat this," she thought, glancing up at her brother. "He's too desperate. He's never made lunch before. Why did he make this? Why won't he tell us what it is? What's going on here?" she wondered, and Casey's expression revealed that he was wondering the exact same thing. "Is Dad trying to do something to us? Is this green stuff going to change us, or hurt us, or make us grow leaves too?" What crazy thoughts, Margaret realized. But she also realized that she was terrified of whatever this was he was trying to feed them. "What's the matter with you two?" their father cried impatiently. He raised his hand in an eating gesture. "Pick up your spoons. Come on. What are you waiting for?" Margaret and Casey raised their spoons and dropped them into the soft green substance. But they didn't raise the spoons to their mouth. They couldn't. "Eat! Eat!" Dr. Brewer screamed, pounding the table with his good hand. "What are you waiting for? Eat your lunch. Go ahead. Eat it. Yeah, eat it. You gotta eat it. Come on, Margaret. You gotta eat it. Yeah, Dune rules. Whatever. Eat it." "He's gonna give us no choice," Margaret thought. Her hand was trembling as she reluctantly raised the spoon to her mouth. Chapter 12. Go ahead. You'll like it," Dr. Brewer insisted, leaning over the table. Casey watched as Margaret raised the spoon to her lips. The doorbell rang. "Who dat is?" Dr. Brewer asked, doing his best African-American impression, very annoyed at the interruption. "I'll be right back, kids," he lumbered out of the front hall. "Saved by the Bell," Margaret said, like that popular television series. And the television series that came after it of the college years. And then the new class. Did you know that the new class of Saved by the Bell ran much longer than the original series? Including the Good Morning, Miss Bliss? Is that the original show name? Anyway, yeah, the new class ran forever. You didn't watch it. No one watched it. Maybe, do you think there's kids, like, way younger than us that are, like, into it? Like, that was a legitimate, fuck it, anyway. "Saved by the Bell," Margaret said, dropping the spoon back into the bowl with a sickening plop. "This stuff is disgusting," Casey whispered. "It's some kind of plant food or something. Yuck!" "Quick," Margaret said, jumping up and grabbing the two bowls. "Help me." They rushed to the sink, pulled out the waste basket, and scooped the contents of both bowls into the garbage. Then they carried both bowls back to the table and set them down beside the spoons. "Let's see who's at the door," Casey said. They crept in the hall to see a man carrying a black briefcase step in the front entranceway and greet their father with a short handshake. The man had a tanned bald head and was wearing a large blue lens sunglasses. He had a brown mustache and was wearing a navy blue suit with a red and white striped tie. "Mr. Martinez," their father exclaimed. "What a surprise." "That's Dad's old boss from Polytech," Margaret whispered to Casey. "I know," Casey replied peevishly. "I said weeks ago I'd come to check out on how your work was coming along," Martinez said, sniffing the air for some reason. "Wellington gave me a lift. My car's in the garage, for a change." "Well, I'm not really ready," Dr. Brewer stammered, looking very uncomfortable, even from Margaret's vantage point behind him. "I wasn't expecting anyone. I mean, I don't think this is a good time." "No problem. I'll just have a quick look," Martinez said, putting a hand on Dr. Brewer's shoulder as if to calm him. "I've always been so interested in your work. You know that. And you know that it wasn't my idea to let you go. The board forced me. They gave me no choice. But I'm not giving up on you. I promise that. Come on. Let's see what kind of progress you're making." "Well," Dr. Brewer couldn't hide his displeasure at Mr. Martinez's surprise appearance. He scowled and tried to block the path to the basement steps.
Basement steps.
At least, it seemed that way to Margaret, who was watching silently beside her brother. Mr. Martinez stepped past Dr. Brewer and pulled open the basement door.
"Hi, guys."
"Hi, man,"
Mr. Martinez said, and gave the kids a wave, hoisting his briefcase as if it weighed 2 tons. Their father looked surprised to see them there. "Did you kids finish your lunch?"
"Yeah, it was pretty good," Casey lied.
The answer seemed to please Dr. Brewer. Adjusting the brim of his Dodgers cap, he followed Mr. Martinez into the basement, carefully closing and locking the door behind him.
"Maybe I'll give Dad his job back," Casey said, walking back into the kitchen.
He pulled open the refrigerator to look for something for lunch.
"Don't be stupid," Margaret said, reaching over him to pull out a container of egg salad. "If Dad really is growing plants that are part animal, he'll be famous. He won't need a job."
"Yeah, I guess," Casey said thoughtfully. "Is that all there is? Just egg salad?"
"I'll make you a sandwich," Margaret offered.
"I'm not really hungry," Casey replied. "That green stuff made me sick. Why do you think he wanted us to eat it?"
"I don't know," Margaret said. She put a hand on Casey's slender shoulder.
"I'm really scared, Casey. I wish Mom were home.
Me too, he said quietly. Margaret put the egg salad back in the refrigerator. She closed the door, then leaned her hot forehead against it.
Casey,
what?
Do you think Dad is telling us the truth?
About what? About anything?
I don't know, Casey said, shaking his head. Then his expression suddenly changed.
There's one way to find out, he said, his eyes lighting up.
What do you mean?
Margaret pushed herself away from the refrigerator.
The first chance we get, the first time Dad is away, Casey whispered.
Let's go back down in the basement and see for ourselves what Dad is doing.
Chapter 13.
They got their chance the next afternoon when their father emerged from the basement, red metal tool chest in hand.
I promised Mr. Henry next door I'd help him install a new sink in his bathroom, he explained, adjusting his Dodgers cap with his free hand.
When are you coming back? Casey asked, glancing at Margaret.
Not very subtle, Casey, Margaret thought, rolling her eyes.
Shouldn't take more than a couple hours, Dr. Brewer said. He disappeared out of the kitchen door.
They watched him cut through the hedges in the backyard and head to Mr. Henry's back door.
It's now or never, Margaret said, glancing doubtfully at Casey.
Think we can do this?
She tried the door, locked, as usual.
No problem, Casey said, a mischievous grin spreading across his face.
Go get a paperclip. I'll show you what my friend Kevin taught me last week.
Margaret obediently found a paperclip on her desk and brought it to him.
Casey straightened the clip out, then poked it onto the lock. In a few seconds, he hummed a triumphant fanfare and pulled the door open.
Now you're an expert lockpicker, huh?
Your friend Kevin's a good guy to know, Margaret said, shaking her head.
He's like rolling D20s and his lockpick skill is the only thing worthwhile.
I'm a magic-using dwarf thief.
Ah, fucking, this is so stupid. Casey grinned and motioned for Margaret to go first.
Okay, let's not think about it. Let's just do it, Margaret said, summoning her courage and stepping into the landing.
A few seconds later, they were in the basement.
Knowing a little of what to expect down there didn't make it any less frightening.
They were immediately hit by a blast of steamy, hot air. The air, Margaret realized, was so wet, so thick that droplets immediately clung to her skin.
Squinting against the sudden bright light, they stopped in the doorway to the plant room.
The plants seemed taller, thicker, more plentiful than the first time they'd ventured down there.
Long, sinewy tendrils drooped from the thick yellow stalks. Broad green and yellow leaves bobbed and trembled, shimmering under the white light.
Leaves slapped against each other, making a soft, wet sound.
A fat tomato plopped to the ground.
Everything seemed to shimmer, like bling-blong. The plants all seemed to quiver, expectantly. They weren't standing still. They seemed to be reaching up, reaching out, quaking with energy as they grew.
Long brown tendrils snaked along the dirt, wrapping themselves around other plants, around each other.
A bushy fern had grown to the ceiling, like Margaret's, curved and started its way back down again.
Wow! Casey cried, impressed with this trembling, glistening jungle.
Are all these plants really brand new?
I guess so, Margaret said softly. They look prehistoric.
They heard breathing sounds, loud sighing, a low moan coming from the direction of the supply closet against the wall.
A tendril suddenly swung out from the long stalk.
Margaret pulled Casey back.
Look out! Don't get close, she warned.
I know, he said sharply, moving away from her.
Don't grab me like that. You scared me.
The tendril slid harmlessly into the dirt.
Sorry, she said, squeezing his shoulder affectionately. It's just, well, you remember last time.
I'll be careful, he said.
Margaret shuddered. She heard breathing. Steady, quiet breathing.
These plants are definitely not normal, she thought.
She took a step back, letting her eyes roam over the amazing jungle of slithering, sighing plants.
She was still staring at them when she heard Casey's terrified scream.
Help! It's got me! It's got me!
Somehow Kelly is sleeping through this, which is absolutely baffling since she's 4 feet away.
Chapter 14.
Margaret uttered a shriek of terror and spun away from the plants to find her brother. Help! Casey cried. Gripping with fear, Margaret took a few steps towards Casey, then saw the small gray creature scampering across the floor. She started to laugh. Casey, it's a squirrel. What? His voice was several octaves higher than normal. It grabbed my ankle and... Look, Margaret said, pointing. It's a squirrel. Look how scared it is. It must have run right into you. Oh. Casey sighed. The color began to return to his ash-gray face. I thought it was a plant. Right. A furry gray plant, Margaret said, shaking her head. Her heart was still thudding in her chest. You gave me a scare, Casey. The squirrel stopped several yards away, turned, stood up on its hind legs, and stared back at them, quivering all over. How'd a squirrel get down here? Casey demanded, his voice still shaky. Margaret shrugged. Squirrels are always getting in, she said. And remember that chipmunk we couldn't get rid of? Then she glanced over to a small ground-level window at the top of the opposite wall. That window, it's open, she told Casey. The squirrel must have climbed in over there. Shoo! Casey yelled at the squirrel. She started to chase it. The squirrel's tail shot right up in the air, and then it took off, running through the tangled plants. Get out! Get out! Casey screamed. The terrified squirrel, with Casey in close pursuit, circled the plants twice. Then it headed for the far well, leapt onto a curtain, then onto a higher carton. Oh, it leapt onto a carton, then a higher carton, that makes sense. Then bounced out the window. Casey stopped running and stared at the window. Good work, Margaret said. Now let's get out of here. We don't know what anything is. We have no idea what to look for, so we can't tell if Dad is telling the truth or not. She started toward the stairs, but stopped when she heard the bumping sound. Casey, did you hear that? She searched for her brother, but he was hidden by the thick leaves of the plants. Casey! Yeah, I heard it, he said, still out of her view. It's coming from the supply closet. The loud thumping made Margaret shudder. It sounded to her exactly like someone banging on a closet wall. Casey, let's check it out, she said. No reply. The banging got louder. Casey? Why wasn't he answering her? Casey, where are you? You're frightening me, Margaret called, moving closer to the shimmering plants. Another tomato plopped to the ground, so near her foot it made her jump. Despite the intense heat, she suddenly felt cold all over. Casey? Margaret, come here. I found something, he said. He sounded uncertain, worried. She hurried around the plants and saw him standing in front of the work table beside the supply closet. The banging from the closet had stopped. Casey, what's the matter? You scared me, Margaret scolded. She stopped and leaned against the wooden work table. Look, her brother said, holding up a dark, folded bundle. I found this on the floor, shoved under the wood table. Work table also. Huh? What is it? Margaret asked. Casey unfolded it. It was a suit jacket. A blue suit jacket. A red striped necktie was folded inside it. It's Mr. Martinez's. Casey said, squeezing the collar of the wrinkled jacket between his hands. It's his jacket and tie. Margaret's mouth dropped open into a wide oh of surprise. You mean he left it here? Yeah, if he and Dad were fucking. Yeah, but he hasn't done that since he went to anti-gay Christian camp. If he left it, why was it bundled up and shoved back under the table? Casey asked. Margaret stared at the jacket. She ran her hand over the silky striped tie. I feel like I could have made a real joke there previously about the Christian camps, because those do exist and they're... They're sad. They're really sad. But the point is, I didn't pre-write you this. I'm tired and drunk. And every time I breathe, it tastes like bell pepper. And just, I'm sorry. Did you see Mr. Martinez leave the house yesterday afternoon? Casey asked. No, Margaret answered. But he must have left. I mean, his car was gone. He didn't drive, remember? He told Dad he got a lift. Margaret raised her eyes from the wrinkled jacket to her brother's worried face. Casey, what are you saying? That Mr. Martinez didn't leave? That he was eaten by a plant or something? That's ridiculous. Then why were his coat and tie hidden like that? Casey demanded. Margaret didn't have a chance to respond. They both gasped as they heard loud footsteps on the stairs. Someone was hurrying down to the basement. Hide! Margaret whispered. Where? Casey asked, his eyes wide with panic.
Oh my God.
Chapter 15. Margaret leapt onto the carton and then pulled herself through the small open window. A tight squeeze, but she struggled out onto the grass. Then she turned around to help Casey. That squirrel turned out to be a friend, she thought, tugging her brother's arms as he scrambled out of the basement. It showed us the only escape route. The afternoon air felt quite cool compared to the steamy basement. Breathing hard, they both squatted down to peer into the window. "Who is it?" Casey whispered. Margaret didn't have to answer. They both saw their father step into the white light, his eyes searching the plant room. "Why did Dad come back?" Casey asked. Margaret held a finger to her lips. Then she climbed to her feet and pulled Casey towards the back door. "Come on, hurry!" The back door was unlocked. They stepped into the kitchen just as their father emerged from the basement, a concerned expression on his face. "Hey, there you are!" he exclaimed. "Hi, Dad," Margaret said, trying to sound casual. "Why'd you come back?" "Had to get some more tools," he answered. Studying their faces, he eyed them suspiciously. "Where were you two?" "Out in the backyard," Margaret said quickly. "We came in when you heard the back door slam." Dr. Brewer scowled and shook his head. "You never used to lie to me before," he said. "I know you went down to the basement again. You left the door wide open." "We just wanted to look," Casey said quickly, glancing at Margaret, his expression fearful. "We found Mr. Martinez's jacket and tie," Margaret said. "What happened to him, Dad?" "Huh?" The question seemed to catch Miss Dr. Brewer by surprise. "Why did he leave his jacket and tie down there?" Margaret asked. "I'm raising two snoops," her father griped. "Martinez got hot, okay. I have to keep the basement at a very high tropical temperature with lots of humidity, okay? Martinez became very uncomfortable. He removed his jacket and tie, and he put them down on the work table. Then he forgot them when he left. So what? Not a big deal. Whatever. I don't even care." Dr. Brewer chuckled. "I think he was in a state of shock from everything I showed him down there. It's no wonder he forgot his things. But I called Martinez this morning. I'm going to drive over and return his stuff when I finish at Mr. Henry's." "Doctor, Mr.? That's just confusing for me." Margaret saw a smile break out on Casey's face. She felt relieved, too. It was good to know that Mr. Martinez was okay. How awful to suspect my own father of doing something terrible to someone, she thought. But she couldn't help herself. The fear returned every time she saw him. "I'd better get going," Dr. Brewer said, carrying the tools he had picked up. He started towards the back door, but he stopped at the end of the hall and turned around. "Don't go back in the basement, okay? It really could be dangerous. You could be very sorry." Margaret listened to the screen door slam behind him. Was that a warning or a threat? She wondered. All right, chapter 16. Margaret spent Saturday morning hiking up in the Golden Hills with Diane. The sun burned through the morning smog. The skies turned blue. A strong breeze kept them from getting too hot. The narrow road was lined with red and yellow wildflowers, and Margaret felt as if she were traveling somewhere far, far away. They had lunch at Diane's house, tomato soup and avocado salad, then wandered back to Margaret's house. Trying to figure out how to spend the rest of the beautiful afternoon, Dr. Brewer was just backing the station wagon down the driveway as Margaret and Diane rode up on their bikes. He rolled down the window, a broad smile on his face. "Good news," he shouted. "Your mom is on her way home. I'm going to the airport to get her." "Oh, that's great," Margaret exclaimed, so happy she could almost cry. Margaret and Diane waved and pedaled up the driveway. "I'm so happy," Margaret thought. "It'll be so good to have her back. Someone I could talk to. Someone who can explain about Dad." They looked through some old copies of Sassy and People magazine in Margaret's room, listening to some tapes that Margaret had recently bought. You know, Ace of Base, Savage Garden, all that cool shit. At a little past three, Diane suddenly remembered that she had a makeup piano lesson that she was late for. She rushed out of the house in a panic, jumped on her bike and yelled, "Say hi to your mom for me," and disappeared down the driveway. Margaret stood behind the house, looking out at the rolling hills, wondering what to do next to make the time pass before her mother got home. The strong, swirling breeze felt cool against her face. She decided to get a book and go sit down with it under the shady sassafras tree in the middle of the yard. She turned and pulled open the kitchen door, and Casey came running down. "Where are our kites?" he asked, out of breath. "Kites? I don't know. Why?" Margaret asked. "Hey," she grabbed his shoulder to get his attention, "Mom's coming home. She should be here in an hour or so." "Great!" he cried, imitating that tiger that's on the cereal box. I only have Frankenberry. I don't. "Just enough time to fly some kites. It's so windy. Come on. Want to fly them with me?" "Sure," Margaret said. "It would help pass the time." She thought hard, trying to remember where she'd put the kites. "Are they in the garage?" "No," Casey told her. "I know. They're in the basement, on those shelves. The string, too." He pushed past her into the house. "I'll jimmy the lock and go down there and get him. Hey, Casey, be careful down there," she called after him. He disappeared into the hallway. Margaret had second thoughts. She didn't want Casey down there by himself in the plant room. "Wait up," she called. "I'll come with you." They made their way down the stairs quickly, into the hot, steamy air, into the bright lights. The plant seemed to bend towards them, to reach out to them as they walked by. Margaret tried to ignore them, walking behind Casey, but she kept her eyes on the tall metal shelf straight ahead. The shelves were deep and filled with old, unwanted toys, games, and sports equipment, a plastic tent, some old sleeping bags. Casey got there first and started rummaging around on the lower shelves. "I know they're here somewhere," he said. "Yeah, I remember storing them here," Margaret said, turning her eyes over the top shelf. Casey, down on his knees, started pulling boxes off the bottom shelf. Suddenly, he stopped. "Whoa, Margaret." "Huh?" She took a step back. "What is it?" "Look at this," Casey said softly. He pulled something out from behind the shelves, then stood up with it bundled in his hands. Margaret saw that he was holding a pair of black shoes and a pair of blue trousers. Blue suit trousers. His face suddenly pale, his features drawn. Casey let the shoes drop to the floor. He unfurled the trousers and held them up in front of him. "Hey, look in the back pocket," Margaret said, pointing. Casey reached in the back pocket and pulled out a black leather wallet. "I don't believe this," Margaret said. Casey's hand trembled as he opened the wallet and searched inside. He pulled out a green card and an American Express card and read the name on it. "It belongs to Mr. Martinez," he said, swallowing hard. He raised his eyes to Margaret's. "This is Mr. Martinez's stuff." Wow. This shit's really hitting the fan here. You know, there's a woot-off going on right now, and kind of distracting, let me tell you. But I gotta finish, and I gotta drink. Chapter 17. "Dad lied," Casey said, staring in horror at the wallet in his hands. "Mr. Martinez might leave without his jacket, but he won't leave without his pants and shoes. Unless something else is going on, you know, a little Craigslist M for M, a little P&P action, you know, hanging out with Tina." "But what happened to him?" Margaret asked, feeling sick. Casey slammed the wallet shut. He shook his head sadly, but didn't reply. In the center of the room, a plant seemed to groan. The sound startled the two kids. "Dad lied," Casey repeated, staring down at the plants and shoes on the floor. "Dad lied to us." "What are we going to do?" Margaret cried, panic and desperation in her voice. "We've got to tell someone what's happening here, but who?" The plant groaned again. Tendrils snaked along the dirt. Leaves clapped against each other softly, wetly. And then the banging began again in the supply closet next to the shelves. Margaret stared at Casey. "That thumping, what is it?" They both listened to the insistent banging sounds. A low moan issued from the closet, followed by a higher-pitched one, both mournful, both very human-sounding. "I think someone's in there," Margaret exclaimed. "Maybe it's Mr. Martinez," Casey suggested, still gripping the wallet tightly in his hand. Thud, thud, thud. "Do you think we should open the closet?" Casey said timidly. A plant groaned as if it was answering. "Yes, I think we should," Margaret replied, suddenly cold all over. "If it's Mr. Martinez in there, we've got to let him out." Casey set the wallet down on the shelf. Then they moved quickly to the supply closet. Across from them, the plant seemed to shift and move as two kids did. They heard breathing sounds, another groan, scurrying noises. Leaves bristled on their stalks. Tendrils drooped and slid. "Hey, look," Casey cried. "I see," Margaret said. "The closet door wasn't just locked. A 2x4 had been nailed over it. Thud, thud,
thud thud thud. Thud 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 thud. Einstein, Tech 9. There's someone in there. I know it, Margaret cried. I'll get the hammer, Casey said, keeping close to the wall, as far away from the plants as he could. He edged his way towards the work table. A few seconds later, he turned with a claw hammer. Thud, thud. Working together, they prod the 2x4 off the door. It clattered noisily to the floor. The banging from inside the supply closet grew louder, more insistent. Now what do we do about the lock? Margaret asked, staring at it. Casey scratched his head. They both had perspiration dripping down their faces. The steamy, hot air made it hard to catch their breaths. I don't know how to unlock it, Casey said, stumped. What if we tried to pry the door the way we tried to pry off the 2x4? Margaret asked. Thud, thud, thud. Casey shrugged. I don't know. Let's try. Working the claw of the hammer into the narrow crack, they tried prying the door on the side of the lock. When it wouldn't budge, they moved to the hinge on the side of the door and tried there. It's not moving, Casey said, mopping his forehead with his arm. Keep trying, Margaret said. Here, let's both push it. Digging the claw in just above the lower hinge, they both pushed the handle of the hammer with all their strength. It moved a little, Margaret said, breathing hard. They kept at it. The wet wood began to crack. They both pushed against the hammer, wedging the claw into the crack. Finally, with a loud ripping sound, they managed to pull the door off. Huh? Casey dropped the hammer. They both squinted into the dark closet and screamed in horror when they saw what was inside. Literally snorting during me yelling. Well, I'm 4 feet maximum. Anyway, long hammer, IPA, that is not bad. This is chapter 18, okay? Look, Margaret cried, her heart thudding. She suddenly felt dizzy. She gripped the inside of the closet to steady herself. I don't believe this, Casey said quietly, his voice trembling as they stared into the long, narrow supply closet. They both gaped at the weird plants that filled the closet. Were they plants? Under the dimmed ceiling bulb, they bent and writhed, groaning, breathing, sighing. Branches shook. Leaves shimmered and moved. Tall plants leaned forward as if reaching out to Margaret and Casey. Look at that one, Casey cried, taking a step back, stumbling into Margaret. It has an arm. Oh. Margaret followed Casey's stare. Casey was right. The tall, leafy plant appeared to have a green, human arm descending from its stalk. Margaret's eyes darted around the closet. To her horror, she realized that several plants seemed to have human feature. Green arms, a yellow hand with 3 fingers poking from it, 2 stumpy legs where the stem should be. She and her brother both cried out when they saw the plant with the face. Inside a cluster of broad leaves, there appeared to grow a round green tomato. But the tomato had a human-shaped nose and an open mouth, from which it repeatedly uttered the most mournful sighs and groans. Another plant, a short plant with clusters of broad oval leaves, had 2 green, nearly human faces, partly hidden by the leaves, both wailing through open mouths. Let's get out of here, Casey cried, grabbing Margaret's hand in fear and tugging her away from the closet. This is gross! The plants moaned and sighed. Green fingerless hands reached out to Margaret and Casey. A yellow, sick-looking plant near the wall made choking sounds. A tall, flowering plant staggered toward them, thin tendril-like arms outstretched. Wait! Margaret cried, pulling her hand out of Casey's. She spotted something on the closet floor behind the moaning, shifting plants. Casey, what's that? She asked, pointing. She struggled to focus her eyes in the dim light of the closet. On the floor behind the plants, near the shelves in the back wall, were 2 human feet. Margaret stepped cautiously into the closet. The feet she saw were attached to 2 legs. Margaret, let's go, Casey pleaded. No, look, there's someone back there, Margaret said, staring hard. Huh? A person, not a plant, Margaret said. She took another step.
A soft green arm brushed her side. "Margaret, what are you doing?" Casey asked, his voice high and frightened. "I have to see who it is," Margaret said. She took a deep breath and held it. Then, ignoring the moans, the sighs, the green arms reaching out to her, the hideous green tomato faces, she plunged through the plants to the back of the closet. "Dad!" she cried. Her father was lying on the floor, his hands and feet tied tightly with plant tendrils, his mouth gagged by a wide strip of elastic tape. "Margaret," Casey was beside her. He lowered his eyes to the floor. "Oh, no!" Their father stared at them, pleading with his eyes. "Mmm!" he cried, struggling to talk through the gag. Margaret dived to the floor and started to untie him. "No, stop!" Casey cried and pulled her back by the shoulders. "Casey, let's get out of here. What's wrong with you?" Margaret cried angrily. "It's Dad. It can't be Dad," Casey said, still holding her by the shoulders. "Dad is at the airport, remember?" Behind them, the plants seemed to be moaning in unison, a terrifying chorus. A tall plant fell over and roared towards the open closet door. "Mmm!" Their father continued to plead, struggling at the tendrils that imprisoned him. "I've got to untie him," Margaret told her brother. "Let go of me." "No," Casey insisted. "Margaret, look at his head." Margaret turned her eyes to her father's head. He was bareheaded, no Dodgers hat. He had tufts of green leaves growing where his hair should be. "We've already seen that," Margaret snapped. "It's a side effect, remember?" She reached down to pull her father's ropes. "No, don't," Casey insisted. Okay, Margaret said. "I'll just pull the tape off his mouth. I won't untie him." She reached down and tugged at the elastic tape until she managed to get it off. "Kids, I'm so glad to see you," Dr. Brewer said. "Quick, untie me." "How'd you get here?" Casey demanded, standing above him, hands on his hips, staring down at him suspiciously. "We saw you leave for the airport." "That wasn't me," Dr. Brewer said. "I've been locked in here for days." "Huh?" Casey cried. "But we saw you," Margaret started. "That wasn't me. It's a plant," Dr. Brewer said. "It's a plant copy of me." "Dad?" Casey said. "Please, there's no time to explain," their father said urgently, raising his leaf-covered head to look toward the closet doorway. "Just untie me, quick." "The father we've been living with, he's a plant?" Margaret cried, swallowing hard. "Yes, please, untie me." Margaret reached for the tendrils. "No," Casey insisted. "How do we know you're telling the truth?" "I'll explain everything, I promise," he pleaded. "Hurry, our lives are at stake. Mr. Martinez is in here, too." Startled, Margaret turned her eyes to the far wall. Sure enough, Mr. Martinez also lay on the floor, bound and gagged. "Let me out, please," her father cried. Behind them, plants moaned and cried. Margaret couldn't stand it anymore. "I'm untying him," she told Casey and bent down, grappling with the tendrils. Her father sighed gratefully. Casey bent down and reluctantly began working at the tendrils, too. Finally, they had loosened them enough so their father could slip out. He climbed to his feet slowly, stretching his arms, moving his legs, bending his knees. "Man, that feels good," he said, giving Margaret and Casey a grim smile. "Dad, should we untie Mr. Martinez?" Margaret asked. Without warning, Dr. Brewer pushed back the two kids and made his way out of the closet. "Dad, whoa, where are you going?" Margaret called. "You said you'd explain everything," Casey insisted. He and his sister ran through the moaning plants, followed by their father. I will, breathing hard. Dr. Brewer strode quickly to the woodpile against the far wall. Margaret and Casey both gasped as he picked up an axe. He spun around to face them, holding the thick axe handle with both hands like a juggalo, his face frozen with determination. He started towards them. "Dad, what are you doing?" Margaret cried. "I have to let Franklin out."
All right. Franklin's fine. He did his thing.
Chapter 19. Swinging the axe onto his shoulder, Dr. Brewer advanced on Margaret and Casey. He groaned from the effort of raising the heavy tool, his face reddening, his eyes wide, excited. "Dad, please," Margaret cried, gripping Casey's shoulder, backing up towards the jungle of plants in the center of the room. "What are you doing?" she repeated. He's not a real father," Casey cried. "I told you we shouldn't untie him." "He is our real father," Margaret insisted. "I know he is." She turned her eyes to her father, looking for an answer. But he stared back at them, his face filled with confusion and menace, the axe in his hands gleaming under the bright ceiling lights. "Dad, answer us," Margaret demanded. "Answer us." Before Dr. Brewer could reply, they heard loud, rapid footsteps clumping down the basement steps.
All four of them turn to the doorway of the plant room to see an alarmed-looking Dr. Brewer enter. He grabbed the bill of his Dodgers cap as he strode angrily towards the two kids. "What are you two doing down here?" he cried. "You promised me. Here's your mother. Don't you want to..." Miss Brewer peered at his side. She started to call out a greeting, but stopped, frozen in horror when she saw the confusing scene. "No!" she cried, seeing the other Dr. Brewer, the capless Dr. Brewer, holding an axe in front of him with both hands. "No!" Her face filled with horror. She turned to the Dr. Brewer that had just brought her home. He glared accusingly at Margaret and Casey. "What have you done? You let him escape." "He's our dad," Margaret said, in a tiny little voice she barely recognized. "I'm your dad," the Dr. Brewer at the doorway bellowed. "Not him. He's not your dad. He's not even human. He's a plant." Margaret and Casey both gasped and drew back in terror. "You're the plant," the bareheaded Dr. Brewer accused, raising the axe. "He's dangerous," the other Dr. Brewer exclaimed. "How could you have let him out?" Caught in the middle, Margaret and Casey stared from one father to the other. Who was their real father? They should call Maury Povich. Fuck. Is this recording still? Checkity check it. Alright, here we go. Maury Povich. Chapter 20. "That's not your real father," Dr. Brewer with the Dodgers cap cried again, moving into the room. "He's a copy, a plant copy, one of my experiments that went wrong. I locked him in the supply closet because he got dangerous." "You're the copy," the other Dr. Brewer accused and raised the axe again. Margaret and Casey stood motionless, exchanging terrified glances. "Kids, what have you done?" Miss Brewer cried, her hands pressed against her cheeks, her eyes wide with disbelief. "What have we done?" Margaret asked her brother in a low voice, staring wide-eyed from one man to the other. Casey seemed too frightened to reply. I don't know what to do," Casey managed to whisper. "What can we do?" Margaret wondered silently, realizing that her entire body was trembling. "He has to be destroyed," the axe-wielding Dr. Brewer shouted, staring at his lookalike across the room. Beside them, plants quivered and shook, sighing loudly. Tendrils slithered across the dirt. Leaves shimmered and whispered. "Put down the axe. You're not fooling anyone," the other Dr. Brewer said. "You have to be destroyed," Dr. Brewer with no cap repeated, his eyes wild, his face scarlet, moving closer, the axe gleaming as if it had been electrified under the white light. "Dad would never act like this," Margaret realized. "Casey and I were idiots. We let him out of the closet." I do like he's gay. "And now he's going to kill our real dad and mom, and then... us." "What can I do?" she wondered, trying to think clearly even though her mind was whirring wildly out of control. "What can I do?" Uttering a desperate cry of protest, Margaret leapt forward and grabbed the axe from the imposter's hands. He gaped in surprise as she steadied her grip on the handle. It was heavier than she'd imagined. "Get back!" she screamed. "Get back now!" "Margaret, wait!" her mother cried, still too frightened to move from the doorway. The capless Dr. Brewer reached for the axe. "Give it back to me. You don't know what you're doing," he pleaded and made a wild grab for it. Margaret pulled back and swung the axe. "Stay back, everyone, stay back." "Thank goodness," Dr. Brewer, with the Dodgers cap, exclaimed. "We've got to get him back in the closet. He's very dangerous." He stepped up to Margaret. "Give me the axe." Margaret hesitated. "Give me the axe." Margaret turned to her mother. "What should I do?" Miss Brewer shrugged helplessly. I don't know." "Princess, don't do it," the capless Dr. Brewer said softly, staring into Margaret's eyes. "He called me princess," Margaret realized. "The other one never had. Does this mean that dad in the closet is my real dad?" "Margaret, give me the axe." The one in the cat made a grab for it. Margaret backed away and swung the axe again. "Get back, both of you, stay back," she warned. "I'm warning you," Dr. Brewer in the cap said. "He's dangerous. Listen to me, Margaret." "Get back," she repeated, desperately trying to decide what to do. "Which one is my real dad? Which one? Which one? Which one? Which one? Which one? Which one?" Her eyes darting back and forth. Back, back, and forth, and forth, back, and forth, back, back, and forth, from one to the other. She saw that each of them had a bandage around his right hand.
and it gave her an idea. "Casey, there's a knife on the wall over there," he said, still holding the axe poised. "Get it for me, fast." Casey obediently hurried to the wall. It took him a short while to find the knife among all the tools hanging there. He reached up on his tiptoes to pull it down, then hurried back to Margaret with it. Margaret lowered the axe and took the long-bladed knife from him. "Margaret, give me the axe," the man in the Dodgers cap insisted impatiently. "Margaret, what are you doing?" the man from the supply closet asked, suddenly frightened. "I have an idea," Margaret said hesitantly. She took a deep breath, then stepped over to the man from the supply closet and pushed the blade into his arm.
Whoa, someone's toughing up. Like Sigourney Weaver, you know, in those alien movies. Like the hot badass chick, but she's in panties. But she's like a dude, but she's like, she's not hot, but her body is, and it just gives you confusing feelings. I'm drunk. I need to finish this shit.
Chapter 21. Ow! He cried out as the blade cut through his skin. Margaret pulled the knife back, having made a tiny puncture hole. Red blood trickled from the hole. "He's our real dad," she told Casey, sighing with relief. "Here, dad," she handed him the axe. "Margaret, you're wrong," the man in the baseball cap cried in alarm. He's tricked you. The capless Dr. Brewer moved quickly. He picked up the axe, took 3 steps forward, pulled the axe back, and swung with all his might. The Dr. Brewer in the cap opened his mouth wide and uttered a hushed cry of alarm. The cry was choked off as the axe cut easily through his body, slicing him in two. A thick green liquid oozed from the wound, and as the man fell, his mouth locked open in disbelief and horror, Margaret could see that his body was actually a stem. He had no bones, no human organs. The body thudded on the floor. Green liquid puddled out of it. "Princess, we're okay," Dr. Brewer cried, flinging the axe aside. "You guessed right." "It wasn't a guess," Margaret said, sinking into his arms. "I remembered the green blood. I saw it late at night. One of you was in the bathroom, bleeding green blood. I knew it wasn't my real dad. He wouldn't have green blood. He would have red blood." That was all like 5 words that I somehow mashed into like 4 sentences because I fucked up the first one. "We're okay," Miss Brewer cried, rushing into her husband's arms. "We're okay. We're all okay." All four of them rushed together in an emotional family hug. "One more thing we have to do," their father said, his arms around the two kids. "Let's get Mr. Martinez out of the closet." "Let's get Mr. Martinez out of the closet." That should have been the tagline on the book as opposed to the real one, which is, "Something's waiting in the dark." You know, it should have been, "Let's get Mr. Martinez out of the closet." Anyway, by dinner time, things had almost returned to normal. They had finally managed to welcome their mother home and tried to explain to her all that had happened in her absence. Mr. Martinez had been rescued from the supply closet. Not too much the worse for wear, he and Dr. Brewer had had a long discussion about what had happened, and about Dr. Brewer's work. He expressed total bewilderment as to what Dr. Brewer had accomplished, but he knew nothing, and he knew enough to realize that it was historic. "Perhaps you need the structured environment the lab on campus offers. I'll talk to the board members about getting you back on staff," Martinez said. It was his way of inviting their father back to work. After Mr. Martinez was driven home, Dr. Brewer disappeared into the basement for an hour. He returned, grim-faced and exhausted. "I destroyed most of the plants," he explained, sinking into an armchair. "I had to. They were suffering. Later, I'll destroy the rest." "Every single plant?" Miss Brewer asked. "Well, there are a few normal ones that I can plant out back in the garden," he replied. He shook his head sadly. "Only a few." At dinner, he finally had the strength to explain to Margaret, Casey, and Miss Brewer what had happened in the basement. "I was working on a super plant," he said, "trying to electrically make a new plant using DNA elements from other plants. Then I accidentally cut my hand on a slide. I didn't realize it, but some of my blood got mixed in with the plant molecules I was using.
When I turned on the machine, my molecules got mixed in with the plant molecules, and I ended up with something that was part human, part plant. That's gross, Casey exclaimed, dropping a fork full of mashed potatoes. Because he said mashed potatoes before, but they're green ones because it was a plant man. Well, I'm a scientist, Dr. Brewer replied. So I didn't think it was gross. I thought it was pretty exciting. I mean, here I was, inventing an entirely new kind of creature. Those plants with faces? Margaret started. Her father nodded. Yes, those were things I made by inserting human materials into plant materials. I kept putting them in the supply closet. I got carried away. I didn't know how far I could go, how human I could make the plants. I could see that my creations were unhappy, suffering, but I couldn't stop. It was too exciting. He took a long drink of malt liquor from his glass. You didn't tell me any of this, Miss Brewer said, shaking her head. I couldn't, he said. I couldn't tell anyone. I was too involved. Then one day, I went too far. I created a plant that was an exact copy of me in almost every way. He looked like me, he sounded like me, and he had my brain, my mind. But he still acted like a plant in some ways, Margaret said. He ate plant food still, and he wasn't perfect, Dr. Brewer said, leaning forward over the dinner table, talking in a low, serious voice. He had flaws. But he was strong enough and smart enough to overpower me, to lock me in the closet, to take my place, and to continue my experiments. And when Martinez arrived unexpectedly, he locked Martinez in the closet too, so that his secrets would be safe. Was the head full of leaves one of the flaws? Casey asked. Dr. Brewer nodded. Yes, he was an almost perfect clone of me, almost a perfect human, but not quite. But Dad, Margaret said, pointing, you have leaves on your head too. He reached up and pulled one off. I know, he said, making a disgusted face. That's really gross, huh? Everyone agreed. Well, when I cut my hand, some of the plant materials mixed with my blood got into my system, he explained. And then I turned on the machine. The machine created a strong chemical reaction between the plant materials and my blood. Then my hair fell out overnight, and the leaves immediately started to sprout. Don't worry, guys. The leaves are falling out already. I think my hair will grow back. Margaret and Casey cheered. Woo-hoo! I guess things will return to normal around here, Miss Brewer said, smiling at her husband. Better than normal, he said, smiling back. If Mr. Martinez convinces the board to give me my job back, I'll tear out the basement and turn it into the best game room you ever saw. Margaret and Casey cheered again. Fuck yeah, woo, I'll take my shirt off, show you these titties, woo. We're all alive and safe, Dr. Brewer said, hugging both kids at once, thanks to you two. It was the happiest dinner Margaret could remember. After they had cleaned up, they all went out for ice cream. It was nearly 10 o'clock when they returned. Dr. Brewer headed for the basement. Hey, where are you going? His wife called suspiciously. I'm going down to deal with the rest of the plants in the basement, Dr. Brewer assured her. I want to make sure that everything is gone, that this horrible chapter in our lives is over. By the end of the week, most of the plants had been destroyed. A giant pile of leaves, roots, and stalks were burned in a bonfire that lasted for hours. A few tiny plants had been transplanted outside. All of the equipment had been dismantled and trucked to the university. On Saturday, all four brewers went to select a pool table for the new basement rec room. On Sunday, Margaret found herself standing in the back of by the garden, staring up at the golden hills. It's so peaceful now, she thought happily. So peaceful here, and so beautiful. A smile faded from her face when she heard the whisper at her feet. Margaret. She looked down to see a small yellow flower nudging her ankle. Margaret, the flower whispered. Help me, please help me. I'm your father, really. I'm your father. The end. You know, that was the end of Stay Out of the Basement by R.L. Stine, read by Dune Murderous for Dune Reads Goosebumps. Yeah, wow. I don't have much to say. There's some plants and shit. I feel like my reading job was a little bit worse on that one, but I'm tired. It's late. I don't want to deal with this. And
Anyway, next up on the Goosebumps series is the book Monster Blood, which, despite the name of the podcast of Dune Reads Goosebumps, will be read by Sam Skills, also known as Sam to the motherfucking Skills with a Z. I probably need to change this to an explicit podcast, but I don't know. No big deal. Anyway, stay spooky, bitches.